Henry, is Philip going to take us through this? Oops, sorry,
yeah.
Let me put you on.
Okay, well, this afternoon we are talking, oh, sorry, this morning, sorry, at this session, we are talking about acquisition costs in two projects over the course of the afternoon. And the proposals in the two projects have been developed, obviously, in two different contexts. In the insurance contracts project, they've been developed in the context of that project's contract measurement model. And in the revenue recognition project, they've been developed in the context of the of that project's revenue recognition model. And we're going to start with the revenue recognition paper on acquisition costs. Now, I think I've welcomed Phil to the team before he joined at the end of last year, but this is his first session actually presenting a paper to the joint board. It's obviously going to be quite difficult for him with us all dispersed, but I'm going to hand over to you, Phil, now for paper 1B and memo 136B.
Thanks, Henry. And there's actually really two parts to the paper. The first part really just deals with some of the comments that we received on the scope of the cost guidance that was given in the exposure draft. The second part, the main part, deals with the accounting for costs of obtaining a contract. The paper does not address the issues we heard about costs of fulfilling a contract. We'll bring that issue back to the board in the March board meeting. So now I'll go over the first part of the paper, and then maybe we can open it up for questions and comments. We had a number of respondents that noted that the guidance on acquisition and fulfillment costs in the exposure draft is inconsistent with other existing accounting literature, such as IAS 2 inventories and Topic 360 for property, plant, and equipment, to name a few examples. Some of those respondents recommended that the boards develop a separate project that would comprehensively reconsider all cost guidance throughout IFRS and US GAAP. The goal would be to develop consistent guidance across all standards for costs, which would be similar to developing a common principle for revenue recognition. And they recommended that the boards finalize that guidance at the same time as the revenue recognition project. The staff agrees that there are some inconsistencies across IFRS and US GAAP on the accounting for different types of costs. However, the staff considered the original objectives of this project and noted that comprehensively reconsidering all cost guidance throughout IFRS and US GAAP was not identified as a priority by the boards at the time of the onset of the revenue recognition project. Additionally, the staff believes that significant improvements in revenue recognition can be achieved without comprehensively reconsidering the accounting for all types of costs. Therefore, the staff has recommended that the board continue to narrowly address the issues of costs of obtaining a contract and, later in March, costs of fulfilling a contract without revisiting the accounting for all costs associated in other accounting standards such as intangibles, inventories, and PP&E. You also note in paragraph 57 of the exposure draft, there's some guidance on that basically says that entities should first apply the guidance in other topics and standards first to see if an asset should be recognized for cost, and if not, that they would apply the guidance in this standard. The staff is not saying that we should change that guidance. We're just saying that we should not reopen inventory and reopen other topics for reconsideration. With that, I'll open it up to the board for discussion.
Okay, thanks, Phil. So how should we play this? Leslie, do you want to deal with your board, or what do you want?
I will do my best to deal with my board. I think the easiest way to do it, since we're all on the phone, is for me to do a roll call, and I'm just going to urge everybody to try and be as brief and concise as possible. Okay? Mark, anything?
Yeah, I mean, I think that when Henry teed it up, I think he teed it up well. He said that there's inconsistencies between the different projects, but I think that that's partly because we have different objectives in the project, with insurance being let's measure the liability and what costs go into measuring a liability, and this project is different from that. It's talking about contracts with customers. I feel feel like there is a, if we were to go down a path where we change significantly, I feel like we might end up with an EITF issue down the line, like we have had in insurance. So my preference to start off with would be to go with the alternative that we had to retain what we had in the ED.
Okay. Russ?
Yeah, with respect to question one, I do agree with the staff recommendation. Do you want the question two now, or do you just want question one?
Mark, I assume that you agreed with question one?
Apologies, yes, I do agree with question one.
Okay, so Russ, why don't you give me both?
Okay, I would, on question two, I would be supportive of alternative A, which is incremental costs of contract that are expected to be recovered.
Okay.
Russ, I think we need to get Phil to introduce
question
two first.
Maybe it's best if we just stick on question one and then let Phil just clarify the recommendation for which acquisition costs should be capitalized, and then we can go around and get approval of that. I think Phil was just asking to question one.
Okay. I agree with that on question one.
Okay, in that case, does any FASB member disagree with question one?
No.
Okay.
No, I don't, this is Larry, I don't disagree with it, but with the understanding that we are going to address fulfillment costs later on.
Understood. And I think that's all five of us on that. Go ahead, Phil.
Okay. So the second part, the main part of it.
One sec, Phil. Let's just ask the ISB members here. Firstly, anybody in London want to comment on question one? Greg Ware?
Yeah, I agree with staff proposal, but you know, previously I mentioned one major piece of cost information we're totally missing, and I'm not sure where we will cover. That is the cost information within the traditional construction contract environment, and the board decided not this at the beginning, not deal with cost, and leave it somewhere else. And then we bring the fulfillment cost, and now we bring the acquisition cost. So I don't know what's the answer, but it seems, you know, something missing.
I think, as Phil was sort of saying, the objective that we have in developing the fulfillment cost proposal.
John, can you get that?
Can we put all the phones on mute, please? A lot of background noise. Somebody get that phone.
Okay, the proposals in the ED about fulfillment costs were about effectively making sure that we haven't created a void in the guidance on contract costs as a result of effectively withdrawing IS 11 and the US equivalent, the US equivalent standard on construction contracts. And I think what Phil is trying to say is that's the focus of our work, and we will be looking at those costs and issues like, do we need disclosures surrounding those costs as well? But we'll be doing those fulfillment costs in March.
But the reason why I want to raise this issue is during our discussions prepared for the ED, we definitely say, no, we will not deal with this issue. This is why I want to raise it again.
Deal with what issue, sorry?
The information related to the traditional construction type of contract, you know, we decide not deal with this issue. And then we bring the fulfillment costs, and then now we bring the acquisition costs. But I want to say, you know, still something missing. You say now we will...
Well, I think what we're trying to do with all of our work on costs is to make sure that we're not creating a void in the existing guidance when we finally, you know, convert this into a final standard and withdraw the existing revenue recognition standards. And that was the reason why the board decided they did need to address fulfillment costs. So that's what we're trying to do.
Now, my key question is, you know, information around the construction contract useful. Originally, the board decided not deal with. So I raised the issue as to where we will deal with. But we keep saying, no, we will not deal with. And later on, we bring the fulfillment costs. And now we bring acquisition costs. Seems we will deal with some of the costs. But I will still raise this issue to where we will deal with.
Steve?
Yeah, David. Steve? I know you're... Is that David?
Yeah, Steve, I'm sorry to butt in, but as I mentioned earlier, I've got to head for the airport right now. It was just to say that Amara's coming with me too. It's just to say I agree with the staff recommendation in question one. I also, if I may go ahead on alternative A, is my preference. I've just got two other points, if I could just make them now, because I'll not be around to make them later. But I also think incremental is the words to use in insurance rather than direct and incremental. Otherwise, I think we're going to start confusing people. What's the difference? And in the insurance paper, I believe we should actually look at the cost for successful and unsuccessful efforts. That's what's built into the premier. I don't think it should just be a sort of cost deferral, successful efforts method. I'm sorry I'm not going to be able to stay now because I'm taxis downstairs, so I'm going to have to dash for it. I thought I'd just like to get my views over now while you're there.
That's fine, and done very succinctly. Amaro, anything to add?
Yeah, not in the same sense. I agree with staff recommendation in both questions in this paper. And I think for the matter of consistency, even with the insurance, just going ahead a little bit, I think using the same wording is better.
Okay, thanks very much, and have a good trip.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. Can we go back to the point?
Well, I think we are trying to address your concern. Maybe we can talk further. But the whole point about the fulfillment costs is to address, I think, the concern that you're highlighting.
It is different, you know. Under older standards about the construction contracts, there are lots of information related to the cost, you know, cost side. How do you accumulate, how do you, you know, allocate, and how do you calculate the cost of goods sold? You know, this is roughly the ideas. But previously, when the board, you know, was generating the ED, the original idea is this is revenue standards. We'll not deal with any cost sides at all. And I raised this issue, where we should, you know, require disclosure or anything else somewhere. But later on, the board bring the fulfillment cost in. I raised this issue again, and the answer is not, we will not deal with that part of the cost information. And now we bring the acquisition costs. And the question is, I not want to deny any discussions or decision related to acquisition or fulfillment costs. My question is still there. You know, we withdraw all the standards, and the information around acquisition, you know, the construction contract, were totally loose. Where we will you bring back? This is my question.
Do you want to take this more offline, and then staff can bring it back another time? Because it's not sort of directly related to this, but I agree. You continue with it offline. Any other questions in London? Okay, anybody on the phone want to talk about question one? If you just shout out your name if you want to talk. Okay, so anybody disagree with the staff recommendation in question one in London? Anybody on the phone disagree with the recommendation? Okay, Phil, back over to you.
Okay, thanks. So the second part of the memo is about the cost of obtaining a contract. We have many responses from public and private companies that disagreed with the exposure draft's guidance to expense all costs of obtaining a contract when they are incurred. Respondents noted that this is inconsistent with the guidance in the board's other exposure drafts, which use either an incremental notion or a direct cost notion in recognizing assets for acquisition costs. Respondents also stated that some costs of obtaining a contract should be capitalized because they meet the definition of an asset and are recoverable from future cash flows. The staff prepared two alternatives to address these comments. Alternative A would require an asset to be recognized for all incremental costs, which are defined as costs that would not have been incurred had the contract not been obtained. The staff believes examples of this would include sales commissions, bonuses, or possibly credit card transaction fees. Costs that would not fall under this definition and that would be expensed as incurred include possibly travel costs, long-distance telephone charges, or lawyer's fees, because those costs would have been incurred regardless of whether the contract was obtained. The asset recognized for incremental costs would be presented separately from an entity's contract asset or liability and subsequently measured on a systematic basis consistent with the pattern of transfer of goods or services. The staff thinks this principle is consistent with the incremental cost principle in existing areas of IFRS and U.S. GAAP, in IFRS 9 and FTB 90-1, and it's also consistent with the way the principle was written for initial direct costs in the lease's ED. However, the staff notes that some of the examples of initial direct costs in that ED would not qualify under the incremental principle in alternative A. So I think what the staff's saying here is that the boards may want to clarify either in this project or in the lease's project that there is a difference between this incremental cost notion and maybe a different word needs to be used for in either exposure draft. The staff also prepared an addendum to the agenda paper that includes a table summarizing all the similarities and differences across the exposure drafts. The staff acknowledges that there are some inconsistencies across the various projects, but the boards may conclude that this is justified due to different cost-benefit considerations and the different models used in some of the projects, as Henry noted earlier. The staff also performed some outreach on the two alternatives with both public and private companies, auditors, and preparers. Preparers and auditors were in favor of alternative A because it eliminates volatility from earnings for growing companies with high acquisition costs, and they believe it's familiar to them. Users were more split between alternatives A and B. Those who supported alternative A concluded that the volatility in earnings created by alternative B would be misleading. And the users who supported alternative B preferred that the income statement match up more closely with the cash flows of the transaction, and they didn't mind the volatility. We also did some outreach with the non-public sector, and I think if Liz is still on the line, she can go over some of that outreach, and then I think we'll turn it over to the boards for discussion.
Yeah, thanks, Phil. As Phil mentioned, overall the comments received to the exposure draft were consistent for both the public and the non-public sector. And specifically related to this paper, as Phil mentioned, we also reached out to members of non-public sector, including the Private Company Financial Reporting Committee and the Technical Issues Committee, to get their views on the two alternatives. And based on the feedback, we've received mixed responses. However, most constituents prefer alternative A. These respondents think that alternative A is more operational, practical, and easy to apply. The terminology is consistent with existing guidance. Costs under both alternatives should be capitalized, and most costs that are guaranteed to be recovered under alternative B could also qualify to be capitalized under alternative A, and therefore would by default also be incremental to obtaining the contract. And others think that under alternative B, it may be difficult to determine what is meant by guaranteed, for example, implicit or contractual. And also, alternative B may be too narrow and would limit most costs from being capitalized. The one respondent who preferred alternative B thinks that alternative B would leave less room for interpretation, seems logical and easier to understand, implement, and audit. And it's also important to point out that some constituents, mainly from the construction industry, agree that with the proposals in the ED, that contract origination costs should be expensed. And some respondents think that cost is too complex of an issue to be a small segment of a large project and should be addressed in a separate project. So with that, I'll turn it over to the boards for comments.
Okay, Leslie, do you want to go first again?
Yes, thanks, Steve. I'd like to start out with a question myself, which is if the staff could help us understand how the discussion that we're having today fits into the cross-cutting issue paper that we know is being worked on with respect to acquisition costs across the project.
Yeah, we received an email, sort of an update, and I think that they're still accumulating information from the teams, both on what the current proposals are in each project and what the ongoing, what the recommendations will be. But my understanding is that the cross-cutting team was not proposing any recommendations. I do think that the biggest impact here is that the boards need to clarify, I think, in certain cases where the word's incremental, and then there's also some of the same wording used when we define incremental. The same exact words are used across projects, and yet they don't mean the same thing, because I think in other projects we mean incremental and direct, or incremental or direct, and I think we just need to clarify what we mean across each project and select the exact terms that we want to use for which cost that we want to be capitalized or not.
So, Liz, can I ask a question?
Yes, go, Larry.
Are these decisions that we make today tentative, pending review of this cross-cutting memo, and then we would either affirm or change those decisions? I'm a little confused.
It's Alan here. Can I just come in and describe the cross-cutting issues in a little bit more detail? What we've done, just so people understand, is we've asked some senior staff to document across the major projects, and particularly insurance, revenue, and leases, the issues that are identifiable as cross-cutting, in other words, they affect all those projects, such as acquisition-related costs. Now, the purpose of that memo is to document what decisions have been made and identify where there are potentially differences in either the treatment chosen or potentially in terms of terminology, for example. And I think we've just talked about some of the terminology issues today. The purpose of the memo is not to force the boards to make decisions that are absolutely consistent. The purpose of the memo is to identify that there are issues, and the boards should either decide to eliminate those differences by changing their mind in one of the particular projects so they do get consistent decisions, or at least justify why they believe in the context of a given project it is appropriate to retain a difference. And from the ISB side, this is an issue that was discussed by the IFRS Advisory Council at length, and their advice to us was simply, they said you shouldn't, there are cases where it's appropriate to have differences. What was important for them, though, is that we acknowledge those differences. Now, the purpose of the cross-cutting paper is to bring those to our attention so that when we do make decisions, we're not making them in isolation, and rationalise or justify your decision. So if that can answer your question, Larry, is that our objective here of bringing these two issues in terms of insurance and revenue together at the same time is to ensure that they are discussed together. You might decide to leave some differences because you might decide that's appropriate.
Leslie, may I jump in?
Sure, go ahead.
This is Tom. Alan, I understand that, and I think it's right that we perhaps end up with differences across the projects. I still don't understand that without identifying what the key aspects of accounting for costs of obtaining contracts that exist across the three projects, how we can be anything but a tentative decision today without having each of those issues raised and identified and then decided whether we want to have differences. For example, both papers today talk about incremental. There are three other aspects and recovery, but there are three other aspects and the cost of obtaining contracts that we're not going to consistently be talking about in deciding whether we do things similarly or differently. Those are: what is the unit of account, the individual contract or the portfolio, what overhead, if anything, is included. And if I look at overhead, I think the word direct is there to say only certain direct overhead beyond the incremental variable costs would be in there. and then the issue as to whether the contracts are only the costs that are successful or unsuccessful are capitalized. It would seem to me those are the four or five decisions that are common across that, and without us having identified those, how are we going to be able to decide whether we're making consistent decisions or different decisions and why? So it would appear this decision in isolation is tentative.
Well, I think from the ISP's due process perspective, all our decisions are tentative until everything you actually have the formal vote anyway. And the idea of, again, the cross-cutting paper, we will continue to update that paper as the projects develop, so that when you bring the projects to a head to the point that where you actually vote for or against a given standard, that you know at that point how we've dealt with the cross-cutting issues. So I do see this as being slightly evolutionary. We toyed with the different ways to do this because we could bring every cross-cutting issue together for every project, and that was going to constrain the teams too much. So the idea of the cross-cutting paper was to ensure that we at least identify those issues, dealt with what might be the main differences between particular requirements, and then we will come back together as before we sign off on the documents to see how we've addressed those matters.
Okay, thank you. Let me start with Mark. I recall that you said you would prefer to retain what was in the ED.
Yeah, that would be alternative B.
Okay. Russ?
I would be supportive of alternative A.
Okay. Tom?
I'm leaning towards alternative A because it is it starts with a framework that will cause us to be at least be remotely consistent across, or at least similar across insurance, leases, perhaps financial instruments, and revenue recognition. My concern is that we're not addressing all the issues. I like the notion of incremental costs, but to apply the notion of incremental costs, it is necessary to understand the portfolio of costs that could potentially be incremental. And to do that, we need to know what the unit of account is. If it's at the individual contract level, sales salaries, for example, would not be considered incremental to an individual contract, but it might be to a portfolio of contracts, where selling commissions would be. Do we want the way you pay people, internal or external, to end up with different costs being capitalized? So to say incremental, I think we have to say incremental at what unit of account, and we have to say then incremental of just variable cost or variable and fixed cost. I think we mean some fixed costs, but only direct fixed costs. So the staff's decision to say that they don't want to develop the notion of direct here, I think will make option A inoperable. People will be asking questions as to what incremental costs to include. Finally, I think we have to make a decision about successful or unsuccessful. I believe only successful contract acquisition costs qualify as an asset.
So
I'm leading A.
Can I ask a question of the staff on that last point? I had thought that implicit in your recommendation on alternative A was that only successful costs would be eligible. Is that correct?
That's correct, but there's a little bit of confusion on that, I think, as well as the cost at a portfolio level looking at this at the portfolio level. Because the definition says costs that would not have been incurred had the contract not been obtained, I don't believe that the incremental definition, and I think this is consistent across where it's used in current U.S. GAAP as well as in the financial instruments exposure draft, the ISB's financial exposure draft, that is. Those costs at the portfolio level for such as, you know, salaries or paying an external organization to obtain contracts for you, those would not qualify as incremental under our definition. And I don't think they would in those other cases either. So I'm not sure, at least where we're going on that, but I think the definition is clear there. And then in terms of successful efforts, I also believe that the definition would say that, let's say you have travel expenses to go, you know, obtain a contract, and you obtain that contract, whether or not you successfully obtain the contract, the travel expenses still would not qualify because they would have been incurred regardless of whether you obtain the contract. So they still don't meet the definition of incremental. This is really just variable costs that, like commissions and bonuses, that only get paid out if you get the contract, or like a credit card swipe transaction fee that occurs, you know, when you get the contract.
I don't understand that at all.
So it's not successful efforts.
I don't.
That means.
Guys, one at a time. Larry?
I don't understand that analysis of travel costs whatsoever.
Well, I think that those costs that are successful would just be direct ones. This is not a direct notion. It's an incremental notion.
Okay, so I guess a question that I have, Phil, is when I compare the drafting in this memo to the level of guidance we have provided in other exposure drafts or standards, it's much more high level and brief. Is it your intent to develop it to provide some examples like what we're talking about?
Yes, we could do that. We could either provide an illustration, or we could, you know, have a, you know, a list of examples.
Bill?
Sorry.
Well, I agree with your decision. The unit, incremental, successful at the individual contract level, I like that. That's going to be, contrastingly to leases and insurance, vastly different. Because what will happen at insurance will be the portfolio level of the staff recommendations there, which will bring in more overhead costs like sales salaries, and it will add in the notion of direct and more overhead costs that would be included, and I think that's consistent with what we're doing in leases, or at least what we proposed in leases. And that's the issue I think that we have to decide, whether we're comfortable with your recommendations in revenue being individual contract, truly incremental, basically no overhead for successful, and then change those decisions for overhead and direct overhead in leases and insurance. I don't understand why we would want to be inconsistent.
Okay, well, let's see how the vote comes out, and then to the extent that there are differences, I think this would need to go into that analysis that Alan was talking about being conscious of the decisions and explaining them to the extent that we do want to retain them. Larry?
Well, what I heard Alan say was, in not so many words, was basically our decisions today are tentative, and that's the way I'm voting. I'm definitely leaning towards alternative A, but I still really don't understand some aspects of alternative A in light of what Phil just said on travel costs, so I need to understand that better. And I need to understand it better as it relates to all of the points Tom raised with respect to the consistency of those decisions that might be made in the insurance project, particularly if we go down a portfolio route. So it's a long-winded way of saying I'm leaning towards alternative A, voting for alternative A, but I really need to understand the details better because right now I don't.
Okay, thank you. I am also leaning toward alternative A. I think this brief conversation so far demonstrates that some of us may have read the words in alternative A to lead to different conclusions on the specific typical costs that are incurred in obtaining a contract. So I think that we do need to develop some examples to make sure we all know what we're agreeing on. Specifically, important to me is that those examples would make clear that we're only talking about the costs related to successful contracts. I heard David's point before, but it seems to me that the pricing of all contracts is intended to recover all of your costs and then, of course, have a margin. But I think that's too broad in terms of allowing capitalization of all of the costs potentially relating to obtaining a contract. So I would want to make sure that we are clear that the amounts, especially in obtaining the contract, that are eligible really only to successful efforts. With that, back to you, Steve.
Okay, thanks, Leslie. Can I just ask my own...
Oh, Russ, I thought I got you, didn't I?
You did. I don't have anything to add. I mean, I interpret incremental. It has to be successful for it to be incremental. So I do think you can make this consistent with insurance based on alternative one and insurance. So I'm not worried about that. But I'll turn it back over to Stephen.
Thank you.
Okay, well, my point was going to be exactly the same as Russ's. If we're, the unit of account is the single contract, then it has to be successful, I guess. And it's a bit of a moot point. But I just wanted to clarify on incremental, because I think Tom said there could be something direct beyond incremental. So just to clarify, we are just saying those costs that have been incurred as a result of successfully obtaining the contract that would not have been incurred had we not obtained the contract.
Yes, it's almost like if you ask yourself, if I hadn't got this contract, would I have incurred that cost? If you can answer yes to that, then it's not incremental to obtaining the contract.
And that seems to me to be extremely clear, and
well,
we're not quite sure why we need a
well,
bit of examples.
I was going to say that one of the advantages that the revenue team saw about being quite restrictive about this was, well, A is that we felt it did address actually the concerns raised by our respondents to the ED, but was also because you didn't have to get into quite significant guidance. But I think, because I think you can read the words different ways, it's very important to have some guidance to clarify, you know, along the lines that Phil was doing just now, just to clarify that the question, say, that Leslie and you have just raised. To make that point about what it effectively, that it is quite limited essentially to costs that you incur because you got the contract.
Sure. Okay. Philippe?
Well, thank you. I think this comparison between alternative A and B is a bit difficult because we are comparing two sets of facts which are totally different. In alternative A, you have two questions. The nature of cost, are they incremental, direct, both? It's a discussion about the scope of how much cost you will consider as possibility to defer. And you have another question, expected versus guaranteed. Alternative B, you assume guaranteed, so no question about recovery, maybe up to the amount which you have an impairment test on that asset, if the margin is not sufficient to absorb those costs. But they are guaranteed, so there is no discussion about the fact you will recover the cost. And whether they are direct, incremental, or whatever, doesn't matter. They are guaranteed to be recovered. It's a contract asset, and for that guarantee to exist, probably you need to have a contract at that time. Otherwise, you have no guarantee. So, to me, once you have this notion of guarantee to be recovered, you have a contract. You have a contract asset, and the amount that you will recover from the customer, to be charged to the customer, as you say, whether it is direct, indirect, variable, whatever, I don't care. It's an asset in my contract. So it's a set of facts which differ from alternative A. I am incurring certain costs, incremental, whatever, and I expect to recover them. Then the question is, what about the timing of the accounting entries? If both having the contract and incurring the cost are in the same accounting period, no problem. If I incur the cost in one accounting period and I get the contract in the next accounting period, what do I do at the end of this first accounting period? I have not yet signed the contract. Should I defer any cost, even though I know in the next accounting period that I've got the contract, day one after? So I think there is a series of issues which seem to be mixed up a little bit between the discussion in A and B, and I don't see clearly how you deal with this question of timing in alternative A. It's clear in B, I've got the contract. I don't have anything to do in terms until I've got the contract.
Staff want to respond to that first.
Well, I think with A, because it's you know, it's incremental to obtaining the contract.
Hey, Henry, can you speak up?
Sorry, I was just saying, it's incremental to obtaining the contract. So you're not going to get a timing difference problem.
I think we need to have this discussion about timing. You are assuming that you don't defer anything until you have got a contract. And that is an issue we should discuss as well. And why is not there a question to discuss about that? The question, I think, could be seen as I'm incurring certain costs and expect, and then there is a unit of account question, if it is a portfolio approach or a single contract. It's very important here. Let's assume we are in a portfolio approach. I expect that 90% of my attempts to get a contract will be successful. I have experience for that. I have record, track record. So on that basis, I will not defer any expense because I've not yet got a contract? Or should I be considering my expected success ratio and say I can defer some costs because I know that 90% of the attempts to get contracts will be successful? You are not asking any question on that. I'm a bit surprised.
Well, I think...
I'm not sure if the question is saying that that definitely would not be capitalized under either alternative. But that being said, I think one reason why we didn't include that as an alternative would be because sometimes it changes. Sometimes, you know, your historical experience says that you get 90% of those, and then 1 year you have a financial crisis, and all of a sudden it's only 30%.
Okay, and you have to consider those facts and circumstances. However, is that consistent, or maybe it's back to the cross-cutting issues, is that consistent with the way we deal with other cost incurred to put an asset in a condition where you can operate the asset? Cost of stripping a mine, is that different? You incur cost, stripping cost, and it seems that IFRIC has told us recently that you should defer those costs. And you have not yet opened a mine. So what's the economic difference?
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess that the context of this is, remember that in the ED, you proposed that no acquisition costs would be capitalized, and they would all be expensed. And so I guess that was the starting point. And what we're doing is we're trying to address the concerns of those respondents who sort of said that they find it particularly anomalous, whereby essentially you incur a cost as a result of obtaining the contract, and therefore you create essentially a sort of a day one anomalous effect. But, you know, in the construction industry today, I mean, you can be incurring significant costs of trying to obtain contracts over quite a long period of time before you get that contract. And that doesn't seem to be a problem to preparers and users. So we're trying to address quite a narrow problem. What we're trying to do is make sure that in those situations today where people do recognize an asset for acquisition costs, that we're trying to capture those situations and preserve the current accounting.
I'm conscious of the time, and we've got a lot of board members wanting to come in. So, final comment?
The final comment, I think the big anomaly is to have an expense in period one and to have a profit to offset this expense in period two just by reversing the expense, because then you have got a contract. And you will have the margin on that contract as well in period two. So I think that is a big anomaly to me.
Okay. Can we put you down as an undecided? Yeah. So we're going to try and finish this by 15 minutes past, and we've got most board members here want to speak, and I guess most on the phone are as well. So we're going to try and keep it short and to the point. Paul?
Thank you. I support the staff recommendation first of all, some acquisition costs should be recognized. Secondly, I think incremental is the right way. 33 years ago, when I worked for FASB, I wrote a standard called FASB 19 on oil and gas. And it was a successful efforts standard in that industry. And most of what I've heard this afternoon is a repeat of all the issues from some years ago. I certainly support only recognizing successful costs. I don't think capitalizing an unsuccessful cost meets the definition of an asset in our framework. I want to raise a couple of, I think Tom hit the nail right on the head on the portfolio question. I accept that the decision was made in the insurance project to account at a portfolio level and in the revenue project at a contract level. If we're going to reopen that, fine, then you've got to rethink this again, but I accept that. I want to raise a couple of points that have not come up. One is we have in IFRSs a few costs that flat out we say you can't capitalize, like advertising. Now, you certainly can have incremental advertising costs, but IAS 38 says it is never an asset. And so I think one of our principles would be that in the revenue standard also should not be an asset. I want to raise the issue of, are all costs before you get the contract acquisition costs? Or can some be fulfillment costs? And then how do you draw that, that line? Because I think this paper is only dealing with the acquisition ones. We may yet have to come back and debate what we pre-contract costs or pre-portfolio costs, whatever it might be, that are fulfillment.
I mean, just quickly to respond to that. I mean, you're right, Paul. There are some costs that you incur before obtaining a contract that the board made decisions in the run-up to the ED and said that in certain cases those could be capitalized because they create resources that you're going to use to fulfill that contract, like a design cost. So we will be looking at that again. Yes, it can be difficult, I think, sometimes to draw the line between the acquisition cost and the fulfillment cost, but we think you can make that judgment, particularly if you're quite restrictive about which acquisition costs are eligible for capitalization.
My last point, someone raised, I mean, I'm not sure, I don't remember who, if you incur some costs and you have not yet determined whether the contract is successful or not, I mean, that's out of FAS 19 as well, I think they're eligible for capitalization, but you've always got an impairment test. That would be my view. I think it you just don't know whether you've got an asset or not, and you may and also that's also the year-end cost. At December 31st, you've spent money, and you don't know whether you've got a contract or not. I would not write those off.
Okay.
I think I lean towards alternative B here, not A, and the reason being that I'm seeing difficulty to really justify that under A. In all circumstances, we've got an asset that's for revenue recognition. And I think the other argument, just to keep it brief, I think Mark made that statement early in the beginning, and it shouldn't get lost. There is a clear distinction between what we're discussing here for revenue recognition and what we're discussing on insurance. Revenue recognition here, it says we are considering to set up an asset, where A, for me, is clearly more cost deferral and not an asset. And therefore, I'm leaning towards B. On insurance, we are talking about measuring an insurance contract as a net cash flow, or measuring a liability mainly as a net cash flow. That's a totally different way of looking at it. So we might come to a different conclusion there.
Thanks, Wigwe.
My question relates to the ones raised by Paul. And the ED proposed to capitalize the fulfillment cost of fulfilling the contract, and propose to expense the acquisition costs for obtaining the contract. How we also propose to capitalize the cost of obtaining the contract. You know, during the ED vetting process, I raised the issue to the staff whether you can distinguish between them. And then after that, I went to different jurisdictions to seek views on this one. And the people also raised similar issues. And take Merchant Bank as an example. They said, you know, we will have, during the negotiating process, bidding for the contract, we will incur costs related to restructuring proposal and underwriting, valuation, pricing, allocation, and all these kind of costs. And how many of them belongs to obtaining, how many of them belongs to fulfilling? And so now we decide that we propose to capitalize or defer both of them. And I see the condition or definition of these two, a condition are very similar. You know, we'll bring the future benefits and recoverable and incremental. And the accounting methodology will be also the same, systematically allocate. So my question is, if we use similar or same definition or conditions and similar or same accounting methodology, is it necessary to distinguish them? And secondly, can we distinguish? Because the staff also, in paragraph 6 and 7, raised some of the constituencies, especially private company, also raised the same issue. Can you distinguish between them? And my view is, you know, quite simple. I'm not sure whether staff can take into consideration. And we define the acquisition or obtaining costs very clearly based on timing. Before you acquire or get the contract, all the costs called acquisition cost or obtaining the contract. And those costs should be deferred as proposed by the staff. And as to the other costs incurred after that, we will call the fulfilling costs. And those costs will be subject to other standards rather than deal with by these standards. Otherwise, we'll be confused.
Can I come back later on that? Wei-Gui, are you in favor of the staff recommendation here?
I'm not sure, because staff have to answer my question.
Okay, come back. We'll come back to that at the end. Let me just give the others a chance first. Pat?
Thanks, Steve. I am leaning towards alternative A in this model for the following reasons. I think that the cost to acquire a contract, as they're discussed in this project, do represent a contract asset. I think they're indistinguishable. And hence, I would lean towards A. As it relates to the population of items that meet that test, I was clearly leaning towards the words incremental. When I read the addendum, comparing the RevRec project to the insurance project, as we discussed in a offline meeting this morning, I was confused by what was meant by direct and incremental as opposed to just incremental. It seems to me to be more efficient to have a very clear definition, and I'm leaning towards just the use of the term incremental right now. I don't know what direct and incremental means, but I'm open to listening to the arguments there. On the issue of unit of account, I think if you have a different unit of account, then you should be willing to accept perhaps a different approach to what's capitalized and how it's accounted for. I can see an argument for treating, for example, in the insurance project, if the unit of account is the portfolio, both successful and unsuccessful.
Perhaps we're going to come on to insurance in a bit.
But I'm just trying to draw a parallel here to answer a question. Both successful and unsuccessful costs. And the reason is, if the unit of account is the portfolio, then the cost that I'm incurring to generate that asset, which is the portfolio, includes both successful and unsuccessful costs. So I think you can rationalize those two and bridge the gap. I'm not troubled by that. So that's kind of where I am right now.
Okay, thanks. Go to the phones. John?
I support alternative A. I think everything I would want to say has already been said. My preference would be to expense all this stuff, but if we're not, we ought to be as consistent as we can across the different projects.
Okay, thanks. Should we go to Warren?
Thanks, Steve. Well, for the record, I don't support either approach, as you would know. I believe they should be expensed, acquisition costs should be expensed on day one, and we should recognise a contract asset. That would be the value of acquiring or originating the contract, rather than deferring acquisition costs and recognising what I think is a rather dubious asset. However, we've had that debate, and unfortunately, I've lost that one, and some others on the board have as well. So if I have to choose between alternative A and alternative B, I would support alternative A, and I think Tom's run through the main arguments, I think, why I think that's appropriate. I think it is largely consistent with what's in the other exposure drafts. And as Alka said, insurance really is a different case. It's broadly consistent with existing literature. The costs are deferred on the basis of an expectation that those costs will be recovered, and that's really the basis of the cost deferral model which permeates our literature at the moment. Given that, I would find it difficult to see why we would support, in this particular case, alternative B, and limit the deferral of those acquisition costs only to those that would be guaranteed to be recovered. I could not see why you would want to take a different approach in this circumstance to what I think we generally do. So, if I have to make a choice, then I'd go for alternative A.
Okay, thanks, Warren. PK?
Thanks, Steve. Couple of things, many points that I want to make have been said, but I want to make a couple of things in this regard. One is that it is not clear to me still that whether this separate line item on the balance sheet meets the definition of an asset, and especially in alternative A. And I would like some articulation how it meets the definition of an asset to be a separate line item on the balance sheet. That's one point I want to make very clear, that I have not seen in the paper any argument one way or the other in that. The second point I want to make is that in this document, I think a lot of confusion, which I also went through, a lot of confusion that the FASB board members had, is that obtaining the contract could sound like that the timing could be before the actual obtaining of the contract. I think what the staff is saying here is that this is upon signing the contract, and the staff has consistently used two examples, commission and bonus, are the two items they are mentioning, not the legal costs for preparing the contract documents and other stuff. So I think we have to be very clear. I think we, instead of saying obtaining the contract after obtaining the contract or something like that, should be clarified so that we don't get into this issue, what goes into that bucket. The last point I want to make here is that I am leaning towards alternative A, but what I want to understand, and maybe the staff is planning to bring this up, in the onerous contracts issue, How do you break this so-called asset in your onerous test? Do you put it as a performance obligation, or do you do it? And I'm a little unclear how this is going to be done, especially if this is going to be a separate line item on the balance sheet.
Okay, should we leave that question? You want to come back now quickly on it?
Well, just very quickly, I think it has to be considered in the onerous test, PK, so we will sort of factor it into that. In terms of the asset question, I think it was dealt with in the paper, where we highlight that, you know, the arguments about why originating the contract results in an asset, you know, were pretty well rehearsed in the discussion paper and exposure draft. So I think the boards have acknowledged why the contract gives rise to an asset, and really, you know, the acquisition, capitalizing the acquisition costs is sort of like a surrogate for capturing that contract asset in certain situations.
Okay, thanks. Lastly, Tatsumi.
Oh, yeah, thank you very much. So I couldn't decide my position because I would like to seek the consistency with the insurance acquisition cost and this acquisition cost. So I still have think attractive the proposal in the ED. That means acquisition cost should be expensed. The trouble I have is, say, in case of the insurance, we just think that it should be sort of the should not be recognized as asset. But why in this case just the acquisition cost related to the revenue contract should be capitalized? And I have some sympathy about say it takes long time for construction contract, some preparation for the obtaining the contract, but still conceptually I would like to seek the consistency between the insurance contract and the this revenue recognition. And also the second point is a unit of accounts. Some other people has already pointed out in the revenue recognition it's just a contract basis, and insurance is a portfolio basis. Where the portfolio this difference in unit of account might affect my decision in the future. And also I have a trouble with the successful cost, acquisition cost should be capitalized in this revenue recognition. But I believe that in the case of the insurance contract, I think that the non-successful cost should be treated as acquisition cost. So and I have some trouble is of the consistency. So I do not want to give you my reasons, but I have trouble, and then I have some leaning to alternative A, but still I couldn't decide.
Okay, well, my view is alternative A as well, and I won't go into the reasons they've all already been given. My totting up of this is a fairly clear steer towards alternative A. I think we only had one definite for alternative B and two undecideds, and Tatsumi leaning towards alternative A. So, Leslie, I think we've ended up, it took us rather longer, but I think we've ended up in the same place that you did.
Yes, I think we have four leaning toward A and one leaning toward B on my side.
But very tenuously.
Okay, so this is tentative because of the cross-cutting issues and what we're going. And sorry, Dowell didn't speak earlier, but Dowell was also for A. So that okay. And Philippe has clarified that he's also for A. So, anything else we can do for you on revenue recognition?
No. Based on success.
Let me put you on.
Okay. I see what you're saying.
Sorry, he's on now.
Now, if the board decided to follow the successful approach, and Philip asked, you incur costs in period one, but you will decide to make assessment that you actually get the deal in period two, how should the company account for the expense incurred in period one? Expense? Or
can I address some of these questions?
Go ahead, Phil.
I think a lot of the confusion that's been coming up will really be addressed in the fulfillment cost paper. A lot of these questions about, I guess, what I'll describe as costs that are neither successful nor unsuccessful fall into the fulfillment cost bucket. And those will be addressed at that time for that paper. So I think a lot of those concerns, they're legitimate, and will be discussed then in March.
Phil? Yeah. I understand better now what you meant by the words, but I want to verify that I'm thinking the same way you are to contrast what our next conversation will be about insurance. When you say incremental to obtaining a contract, it's very clear when you say at the individual contract level, the incremental to obtaining has to be, if you're obtaining a contract, successful. And if it's at the individual contract level, it basically has to be directly related to the contract and variable costs. And the reason why you don't say things about direct and successful is it's incremental at the individual contract level to obtain a successful contract. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. And I think maybe where there gets to be some confusion is that I guess you could think of it as it's not incremental to attempting to obtain a contract. So there's a lot of costs that you have that are incremental to the attempt, like travel costs maybe and other things that you might have that could occur whether the contract is successful or unsuccessful. It's really just incremental cost to the actual obtaining the contract.
And okay. I think that's
Thank
why...
That makes sense?
And I think that's why it sort of takes a lot of the pressure away from the timing issue.
Absolutely. Right. Okay, the pressure for the timing issue is going to go on to in the fulfillment cost paper, I think.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, let's draw a line under revenue recognition. Can we go on to insurance? So... Morning, Jennifer and team. We're curious as to how you managed to get into the office.